Hi, this is Rob Hunter. I hope you enjoy your download of Cherokee Purple, first published online in Bewildering Stories, December 2009. These MP3 downloads are released under a Creative Commons license. They're free. Copy the files as much as you want. Pass them around. All I ask is that you don't alter the file or sell it. Just visit www.onetinleg.com, click the Buy a Book link, and you'll be directed to the latest items in the inventory. And thanks for listening. Cherokee Purple. Thelma Wagstaff blew herself away as she sat on her high red upholstered stool, supervising the cash box at the White Street Billiards and Snooker. A symphony of flaccid flesh, Thelma hit the floor like she'd fallen out of an airplane, no parachute, and her pistol went bouncing toward Ed Seitz and me. The gun's muffled report reverberated, echoes, crossing echoes, like a dispatcher's call in a marble train station. Ed and I were absorbed in the cushion shot he was negotiating. We did not look up. There was a fiver riding on Ed's shot. So you can tell us apart. I'm Harley Pigeon, long and tall and stringy with a disorderly brush of sandy brown hair and a migrating cowlick. Sort of Gary Cooper as an Eagle Scout who flunked his merit badges, but without the good looks and skinnier. Ed, he's built like an apple on a stick. Except Ed's apple has slipped to half-mast right at the equator. When Ed leans in to study a billiard shot, it gets kind of scary. You wondering who'll back off and call it quits first, Ed or the slate table. Before her suicide, Thelma's nickel-plated 38 resided harmlessly in an open cigar box on top of her till, where it kept the $10 bills from blowing away. Parrish Wagstaff, old Parrish, to his few friends, had kept the gun loaded with dum-dums, and Thelma continued the practice out of habit. She died by her own hand, and her own pistol, not by throwing herself under a train, as was the practice for the small-town debutante, pregnant, wronged, or just plain bored. Did I tell you Parrish Wagstaff used to own the hardware store? Old Parrish, according to the store's hangers-on, had been made cold by Thelma's increasing poundage. Old Parrish had run off with Norma Cawthorne, a varsity basketball cheerleader in 1928, 20 years before, and not been seen since. Thelma was a comparatively chunky thing back then. 20 years of chocolate-dipped donuts had not improved matters. Anyway, Ed blew his shot as Thelma's vast body slid away in a long, slow faint. We watched her going down sideways. Her folds of fat absorbed the impact of the tiled cement floor as it rushed upwards to accept the offering of her life. Not much of a life lately, I'd heard. Thelma's death and Ed's missed cushion shot were a delayed last act in a blighted marriage. About here you're probably asking yourself where we came from and what we were doing here witnessing a wronged woman's tragic end. Good question. The truth was, we didn't have much to leave behind in Milwaukee, except a cubbyhole office on the second floor of the Zablosky Brothers tannery. The floor was unvarnished oiled hardwood, with red crumbs of sweeping compound ground into the cracks. Frosted glass sagged in the partitions. Walnut paneling was warped and had heaved around the steam pipes from generations of radiator leaks. The Zablosky Brothers were rapacious landlords. For a salesman, knowing things is an important part of the job. I can get you tickets for the White Sox, Cardinals, Cubs, and Bears. I knew sports, Broadway show tunes, heavyweight title fights, and the up-and-coming welterweights. I did my research with the racing form, Variety, and Sporting News. Ask me a question. Go ahead. Ed Seitz is my partner in Factory Findings. Not incorporated. When we had to choose between rent and ink, rent won. We were making a living, barely. Ed once shared his vision of the new South with me. Air conditioning, Harley! That's what will relocate northern manufacturers to Dixie. Now, that's the story, isn't it? It was good to be on the road. Open vistas, fresh air, blah, 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 blah. See America first. We were selling anything we could find a buyer for. My specialty was brass grommets. Ed knew the industrial string and twine business inside out. The leaf springs of Ed's Buick sedan sagged with sample cases and catalogs. He was a salesman to be respected. Our next and only stop was Piedmont, South Carolina, where Dixie Duck and Process had landed a tarpaulin contract for mothballing every duck gun in the entire U.S. fleet. Dixie Duck turned canvas into tarpaulins. To accomplish this, they needed threat and tons of grommets. Ed and I hatched our southern strategy over beer and billiards at the Antlers Hotel near the depot in Milwaukee. So, you see, this is not so much about Thelma, not about Ed and me. It's about grommets and a patch of tomatoes. Cherokee purples. We became Thelma's regulars and hung out at the White Street Billiards and Snooker. It beat staying in our sweltering rooms at the General Long Street, where Charlie Hoskins was the landlord. Charlie will tell you about the tomatoes.
Mr. Lansford's tomato patch. Lansford got killed at Chickamauga. Flop eye, the tomato patch. That's what they call it, count of Mr. Lansford's ocular misalignment. And over here,
his finger traced a crooked boundary line on the banks of the Catawba River,
Hogwalla generated the county's plague of pigs. Got washed out and went wild in the spring floods. Of course, that was 100 years back. Nowadays, we got us a possum plague. With proper attention, the purples are clairvoyant. This is not public knowledge. See, people will have their little dramas that seem pretty important at the time, but Cherokee purples, while not indifferent to human suffering, have their own plans. Who's to know what's important to a tomato? Purples look after their own business. Tomatoes want you to ask. They never volunteer.
Charlie will be back. He comes in later on. Cherokee Purple 2. Norma the cheerleader must have been indeed a legendary cupcake for the surviving hardware store layabouts to treasure her memory for over 20 years. All of her charms, well, almost all, had been revealed by one chance visit. There was water damage at her grandmother's, and Pa Cawthorn figured Norma's eye was keener than his for decorating. The good old boys at the hardware store led Norma upstairs to peruse the collection of embossed tin ceilings. Norma had a short skirt, upthrust bosom, and a peach-colored team sweater with a velour V stitched to the front. I heard this while buying 3 pounds of 8-pitch lag bolts for a retrofit at Dixie Duck. Sharp observers, the guys at the hardware store, and long memories. They mustn't have had many nubile young ladies checking out the tin ceilings in upstairs storage. A quick glance back down the stairs into an ascending cleavage. They cherished Norma's visit for decades.
This way, miss. We don't get much call for tin ceilings, but you never know.
Old Parrish kept the 8-by-16-foot rolls upstairs 25 years past their best use-by date in hope of a buyer. Old Parrish just couldn't throw anything away, and the rolls of stamped tin ceilings had clogged his attic since his father, old Parrish, I supposed, had bought a carload lot right after the Spanish-American War. He was a late convert to advertising, but young old Parrish put in the tin ceiling at the White Street Billiards and Snooker, hoping for an upwelling of the communal aesthetic. The denizens of the White Street Billiards and Snooker looked up infrequently and did not read House and Garden. They cooked with wood, the chimney-clogging pitch pine of the Catawba River bottomland, and Thelma made sure they got home to the missus in time to chop and split. And the good wives of Piedmont's doctors and dentists, who did read House and Garden, were planting magnolias and adding colonnaded porches by 1948. Tin ceilings were off their style radar.
You just follow Sam now, Miss Cawthorn. He knows all the roles.
I just bet. Norma Cawthorn was hot stuff for 1928, or any year for that matter. Old Parrish brought up the rear and drank up the view. He cherchait la femme. Cheerleader's thighs, tightened by a steep incline. Yum, yum. Parrish Wagstaff was a lost man. A sad case, opined Piedmont, and all over a high school girl. Norma Cawthorn and Old Parrish were gone that night. Norma's pa never did come to pick up the tin ceilings. North of town, the Catawba River bottomland flooded regularly. Giant carp, escaped pet aquarium goldfish most likely, were left behind in ruined cornfields when the waters receded. But only the occasional human remains, and never the remains of Old Parrish, and no Norma. Time passes. It is now 1948, and the good life is defined by do-it-yourself gypsum board and linoleum on the floor. Times are better, but not all that much better. Those rolls of tin ceilings languish still, upstairs at Wagstaff and Son Hardware. Wherever Parrish Wagstaff and Norma, the varsity cheerleader, got themselves to, they hadn't sent any postcards back home. They were never heard from again. Until now. Cherokee Purple. 3. As you got closer to the corpse, Thelma's scent was not the smell of death, nitrate, and gunshot residue. This was aquavelva, with overtones of lilac vegetal, a bargain men's cologne rebottled under Parrish's own label. Parrish must have gotten the deal, and Thelma honored his memory even in death. Cologne aside, old Parrish knew his hardware. After 20 years, his bullets were still good. Ask Thelma. Like I said, Ed Seitz blew his cushion shot, and I won $5. A hanky embroidered with plum-colored thread was clenched in Thelma's free hand. This reeked of patchouli. Whatever lonely secret she whispered in her bedtime prayers, Thelma's dialogue with the Almighty was to be continued in a heavily scented afterlife. The White Street Billiards and Snooker had a public payphone on which Thelma conducted all her business. The number was written on many a kitchen wall throughout the county, a useful resource when wandering husbands might be required at home for some heavy lifting. Outgoing calls were mainly for the taxi, to pick up some bourbon deluxe at the bootleggers, with a stop for crushed ice at the drugstore soda fountain. Thelma monitored all outgoing conversations. Ed tried to step around Thelma's body to where the phone hung on the wall behind her counter. He shivered and stood stock still, eyes bulging. He was breaking a sweat that threatened to melt his scissor bill collar. I can't do it, Harley. You call. I rummaged in the cash drawer and tossed him a key. Frisky Giblets, a chicken and ribs joint, was the standby sanitary facility when Thelma had a heavy beer night with customers lined up for the urinal. And the nearest phone Ed wouldn't have to hurtle over Thelma's body to use. He went across the alley, dialed O, and told the operator to send the police. I pocketed Thelma's other spare key. You never knew when nature would call. Colonel Wildrose Mahaffey himself, pale, with lidless eyes and a thin-lipped mouth that showed the gold of many metal teeth, the commandant of Piedmont's 12-man force, appeared in response to Ed's call. Felonious assault death resulting was not a foremost police priority. Colonel Wildrose Mahaffey's first concern was the county's possum plague. Victory over Japan had generated an unheard of fecundity amongst the lowly possum, death by collision resulting for both the rodents and the drivers. Eat mo possum, a favorite football chant, fired Mahaffey's imagination. He got a brainstorm for turning the highway pest into what us sales types call a self-liquidating premium. Eat mo possum road signs and bumper stickers proliferated. The public outcry over the rash of highway deaths regularly got the colonel's picture on the front page of the Chronicle, cradling his shotgun and hoisting a brace of slaughtered possum. Colonel Mahaffey ran for sheriff. Public opinion counted him a sound man, and he held the two positions, commandant of police and county sheriff, simultaneously. The knife-edge crease of his twill uniform trousers announced that even when he sat in the back of his chauffeured prowl car, he never bent. The colonel considered an invisible piece of lint besmirching his uniform as his chauffeur, a sergeant, checked the premises for any perpetrator in hiding. He lingered in the toilet to pee, flushed, and emerged.
"Okay, colonel," said the sergeant.
"And who are you two?" said the colonel, fixing a withering stare on Ed and me. The sergeant stood back 5 paces, hand on his pistol butt. It looked like we were the prime suspects. I did my level best not to smile or laugh, all the while maintaining eye contact. The colonel's spiritually vacant blue pools offered no haven, no recognition of a fellow creature.
"Ever notice that when you're trying to ignore a blatant disfigurement, a hair lip, cotton eye, or birthmark, in the colonel's case, his emotionless water-blue eyes, on an otherwise altogether perfectly pleasant person, you go all stiff, and a demonic possession forces you to stare at the blemish. On Mahaffey's lapel was a campaign button, yellow and shiny, right over his heart. Eat mo possum. I gave it up as a bad job, and under the colonel's icy gaze, broke down laughing.
"The colonel, sir, I eat possum every day."
The colonel seemed pleased. There was a discernible twitch at the corners of his lipless mouth.
"Your boy's not from around here.
It was a statement, not a question. Oh, yes, we are, Ed Sides piped up. We're working with Dixie Duck and Process out on South 100. The colonel's eyes got a dreamy, faraway look.
The more things change, the more they remain the same. He tapped his Eat More Possum button. After the Yankees won the war, we ate the wild pigs. Now we eat possum.
A woman, 40-ish, stylish, and from away, poked her head in the pool hall door.
Oh, hello, Wild Rose.
Hello there, Norma. Haven't seen you since 1928.
That championship team.
That championship year.
It was never the same with you away, honey. Glad you come back home.
The colonel nodded at the body in its pool of coagulating blood.
Thelma couldn't wait. She'd have been glad to see you.
The five of us, six counting Thelma, were silent. The colonel, apparently an avid reader of Nick Carter and Ellery Queen, was having a dramatic moment. He was waiting for one of us to break down and confess everything.
Confess to what?
Thelma had shot herself with her own pistol. Ed and I were witnesses. We had called the police. Case closed.
We'd seen this in 1,000 movies.
About here, your average hard-boiled private eye would make some snappy crack and exchange meaningful glances with the femme fatale. We fidgeted. No one wanted to be the first to clear his throat. Any eye-rolling or throat-clearing would be a dead giveaway. We were a gift from above for a small-town cop to keep on ice for a while in case he needed someone to blame for anything. Wild Rose's sergeant stood, legs apart, blocking the door to the alley, frisky giblets, and freedom. His knuckles were white on the grip of his weapon, as if he expected us to make a break for it.
"Billy Wayne,
easy," said Wild Rose Mahaffey. The sergeant relaxed and grinned.
"Suicide or death by misadventure. Folks in South Carolina don't kill themselves. It's against God's word.
Thelma must have been cleaning it when it went off, right?
You, right?
Me?
Ed Sides.
You. You keep shuffling your feet like that and you'll wear out the linoleum for sure.
It's not linoleum, boss, said Billy Wayne, the sergeant. It's terrazzo.
Meaning the poured, polished, rock aggregate stone floors favored by elementary schools.
Billy Wayne. Shut up. You people watch too many movies.
Billy Wayne smiled. He was the distraction to put everybody at ease. This was a dog and pony show the two men had done many times. Norma laughed.
Of course, if somebody,
here Wild Rose looked toward Norma, felt they had been wronged by old Parrish, they might have done him in.
Hypothetically, Parrish is an open file. The Catawba River mud tends to hold its secrets. I don't figure the county budget would allow for years of excavation looking for something the wild hogs had up anyway 20 years back.
Pigs? Ed looked upset. You mean pigs eat people? This was a reversal of the natural order. For Ed Sites, pigs were a commodity, a menu item, not fanged aggressors. Wild Rose knelt by the body. I noticed he removed the patchouli-scented hanky and put it in his pocket.
A clue.
I read Nick Carter and Ellery Queen, too. With Thelma's death, Ed and I had been initiated into the life of Piedmont as deep as you can get with an up-north accent and snap-brim fedora. In normal circumstances, Ed's hula-girl neckties were the icebreaker. They got people talking. After a few of our monthly stopovers in Piedmont, South Carolina, we knew all about Norma, the ruined cheerleader, and Old Parrish, the devil seducer. Or, conversely, Norma, the devil seducer, who led a weak man astray. Pick one, please. 20 years on, it was still the big story in town. The basic tale, however, remained unchanged in its salient details. Older man with hots for teen beauty cleans out his bank account and disappears with said babe. Except that here was the babe, tailored with big city smarts at the scene of the wronged woman's suicide. Norma's eyes grew shrewd, but not cold. Surprisingly warm, in fact. A secret knowledge passed between the policeman and the cheerleader. A shared glance was all, and that got me thinking. He smiled at her. She gave him a wink. These two had a history.
Rosie, that was you followed us that night.
It was.
That was so long ago, and I was infatuated with Parrish.
Old Parrish.
Not that much older as it seems now.
20 years. Like the 20 years you've been gone in Chicago.
You knew where I was. Oh, that figures. You being a policeman and all. That championship team. I figured you for another musclehead football player with no future after high school. You knew it all along. All about Parrish dying where we stopped on our way out of town. And I was in love with you.
I got the feeling Ed and I had become part of the wallpaper, and, like the famous flies thereupon, were witnesses to a passing moment that meant very much to Wild Rose and Norma. I had a bad itch in my probables that Ed Seitz and Harley Pigeon could be in big trouble because of who we were and where we were. The wrong place at the wrong time. And we were being ignored. This made me more than a little bit edgy. I thought of the flypaper at the General Longstreet. Unlike the Cherokee Purples, flypaper foretells the end of time for flies and stops there. No deeper meanings. Flypaper has not been reported to talk with human beings and warn them off some potentially disastrous course. It's sticky, and that's about all.
Cherokee Purple.
4.
Post-war USA. And after years of gas rationing, America was finding its wheels. And so were Harley Pigeon and Ed Seitz. And we headed south. I had my first set of new tires in 4 years. No bald tweedy recaps with a telltale pink bubble of ancient inner tube poking out through the weave. Real tires. Real rubber. No rayon. Not the Akron recaps that peeled off in a couple of months. Staying in the office, Ed and I lost money. On the road, we made money. Milwaukee, Chicago, Vincennes, Evansville, through the Chattahoochee National Forest, Macon, Georgia, to the Florida line. At Valdosta, the sheriff's brother-in-law operated an axle-popping mud hole, and he had the only tow truck in the county. The state police looked the other way. Our alternate route was to scuttle over to pick up U.S. Route 1 at Waycross and miss the Valdosta mud hole and the chance of a sleepover in the lockup. The Route 1 swing took us into Gainesville and Ocala, the beef and citrus belt of central Florida, where we had one account, an alligator tannery. Factory findings met our suppliers' bottom lines, and the rest was gravy. We charged what the traffic would bear. Our MacGuffin was that we guaranteed delivery, or we paid. While the trains could take weeks, we knew the roads, the mud holes, and speed traps of the deep south. We rented a truck and hauled our own freight. We ran at a loss for the first year. Then came Dixie Duck and their contract for mothballing the U.S. fleet. We liked Piedmont, South Carolina. Ed Seitz and I parked the Buick along with our own weary flesh at the General Longstreet tourist cabins. The price was right, cheap, and with the White Street billiards and snooker, we made it our base of operations. With no tourists to speak of, down-at-the-heels business travelers like us generally, times were slim for deep south tourist courts in the days before air conditioning. Charlie Hoskins was a high hoper, though. In Charlie's view, General Longstreet was a hero of the Confederacy, never mind the widows of Confederate war veterans blaming him personally for Morris Roberts' defeat at Gettysburg. Robert E. Lee insisted meeting the Yankees head-on was a gentlemanly way to carry on a war. Longstreet wanted to sneak up behind the Bluebellies and split their forces. General Lee overruled Longstreet and killed enough men to populate a sizable shire. Clearly, Lee was a boob. But Longstreet had posited a sneaky thing, ungentlemanly conduct for a true son of the South. The name Longstreet became anathema. After 4 generations, even high school juniors deigned to whisk their prom dates to Charlie's motor court cabins. Charlie handed us our keys. Use light switch, not the pull chain. He was being helpful. From a habit of fleabag hotels, I shouldered the door open and reached for the chain anyway. I could see it hanging from the bare bulb ceiling fixture and the flashing light from the flying red horse out front.
Oh, shit!
But it was too late. I'd grabbed an extended roll of flypaper. Some late arrivals were still buzzing. One of the great inventions of the 20th century, flypaper comes 10 tubes for $1, 15 cents for one. Makes sense to buy 'em by the box. You ever see the flypaper in the hardware store or down by the Ben Franklin? It comes with one open end from which protrudes a loop of string and a thumbtack. I flapped and flopped and danced around trying to shake loose from the adhesive while filling the basin left-handed from a blue enamelware pitcher. The glue wouldn't wash off. I grumped out to the pumps and cranked some gas over my hands. There was a chamber pot in the commode. When I went to dump it out in the privy the next morning, I checked for flypaper before I went in. Charlie bought flypaper by the carton. A smart shopper.
Cherokee Purple. 5.
You. Wild Rose Mahaffey was talking to the sergeant. Yes? Ed Seitz answered, too eager to please. My partner hadn't quite picked up on the fact that he and I were potential fugitives from an as-yet-to-be-named skullduggery, present at the scene of a violent death and all. I figured if there was anything Rosie Mahaffey could do to help cover up for Norma his high school love, Ed Seitz and I were going in the jar for long-time preservation.
Shut up! You!
Here he pointed at Billy Wayne, the sergeant, who was trying to look inconspicuous, as he studied a girly calendar on the wall near the payphone. Go to the car. Polish up the headlights or something.
Yes, sir!
And they were alone together. Two now, with Ed Seitz and me transparent and Thelma dead. As far as Norma and the colonel were concerned, they were the only people in the room, or in the world, at that moment.
You shouldn't have been so eager, Norma.
Rosie? I was 18, wildly in love. Parrish and I stopped to cut us some trim at the spillway at the old locks. We couldn't keep our hands off each other.
You could spare me the details.
You've replayed that scene over and over in your mind for 20 years, haven't you?
Old Parrish had a heart attack, didn't he?
Rosie, you are a love, but jealousy is unbecoming. We're all grown up now, aren't we? Parrish promised me the world, the big, exciting world outside of South Carolina with the good old boys, the Ku Klux Klan, and all the goddamn football-crazy rednecks.
Like me.
Like you. But I always had a soft spot for you, Wild Rose Mahaffey. And I loved you so much I could have bust, Norma. I was hurting. You followed us. Parrish and me.
People talk. Word got out that old Parrish closed his account at the Farmers and Mercantile and got cash. A lot of cash. You didn't show up for football practice.
And you snuck in the bushes like a common rapscallion. You watched us making love. I must have been too much for him.
The wild hogs ate old Parrish.
Wild Rose Mahaffey's final offering. The woman shuddered, more in the way of a conversational gesture than a deeply felt emotion. There was a roach in her salad rather than a newly dead corpse between her thighs. The romantic interlude was at an end. It had been a long time, after all.
How can you be sure?
I made sure. Baited him with chocolate-dipped donuts, the kind Thelma loved.
The hogs found him, eventually.
Wild Rose Mahaffey! How could you have?
Did you go for help?
The woman was silent.
I knew you couldn't come back, ever. You took old Parrish's poke and old Parrish's car and just left him there. I had to clean things up.
Mahaffey did read a lot of detective stories.
This ain't usually women scatter a story about. But the good old boys at the hardware store already hung you out to dry, Norma.
Norma looked up at the tin ceiling. Three sets of eyes followed her gaze.
Old Parrish treasure. It's gone, said Mahaffey.
Treasure?
Norma.
Treasure?
Ed Seitz.
I shot him an angry look.
Oh, for Christ's sakes, Ed. Shut up.
Treasure.
Colonel Wild Rose Mahaffey. Improving our vocabularies with a word a day, just like in the newspapers.
Oh, you mean all those $50 Confederate bearer bonds that Thelma had him nail up inside the ceiling?
Said Norma, so sweet butter wouldn't melt, etc.
Poor Thelma. She really believed the South would rise again. Yeah, they're probably still up there. The stars and bars, long may they wave. No, Rosie, Parrish's treasure is the rolls of mint-condition tin ceilings in the attic at the store. That's what brought me back home.
You could have heard a pin drop.
In Chicago, Norma added. I'm a decorator.
There was a beep-beep from the street, and a large, moist man in a rumpled suit appeared with a speed graphic camera like reporters used in the movies and popped a pocket full of flashbulbs taking pictures of Thelma's corpse. In Piedmont, the undertaker doubled as coroner and police photographer. Thelma was duly removed. Mahaffey's sergeant took down our local address and telephone.
Just in case we need to ask you boys some questions.
Billy Wayne showed disdain at the mention of the General Longstreet.
Red Rose Rialto's riding town. Save you all the driving.
Air-cooled bar and reasonable, $6 a night.
About the same as we were paying for two rooms and by the week. Thanks, Sergeant, but I figure not to have to shell out more to sleep than I make when I'm awake. And Ed and I were free to go.
The Rialto?
Mahaffey. He offered Norma an arm.
The Rialto.
Norma Cawthorn accepted the elbow of the thin-lipped policeman with the metal teeth, whose heart she had stomped on in high school. She was escorted to the Rialto by Colonel Mahaffey. Norma would soon opt for less trendy transportation in the back seat of Wild Rose Mahaffey's prowl car. Thelma expressed no opinion as the sergeant hopped in the back of the long black hearse and accompanied her to the embalmer's table. This is the end of part one. Cherokee Purple continues with part two.